Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. A new paper in the medical journal The Lancet caught Jeffrey's eye. It discusses testing coronary artery calcium levels instead of cholesterol, for example, as a better predictor of who's at risk for heart disease. Seems to us that it brings into question all the current and, might I say, aggressive treatments being used currently for people deemed to be at risk. It even seems to push against using measurements of inflammation or C-reactive protein as the sole predictor. Its conclusions seem to support, without recommending, nutrient therapies that orthomolecular researchers have been promoting for decades. Now, before you throw away your calcium supplements, understand that calcium only deposits into heart valves and the coronary artery under extremes that are related to other nutrient and even hormonal deficiencies. What you may consider throwing away, however, is your statin medication, but not until you listen to the whole show. Stay tuned now for Stupid Heart Treatments. I'm joined, as always, by Jeff Fawcett, PhD, who's a political economist, writer, health consultant, who produces the show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. So we have this research paper, which I attempted to read last night, and it is among the wonkiest of papers I've tried to reach. Usually, if I don't get nervous and I just read them without struggling too much, I can understand. But this one is particularly dense. So, can you break it down for listeners to help them understand what they were doing and what they found?
Sure. And I won't use big words either.
Well, you can, actually.
I can use.
Yeah, you just have to explain what they mean if they're too big.
The paper is by an author who has for about the last decade been involved with a shift in the focus of evaluating risk factors for what they call in the paper heart events or cardiovascular events, which basically means having a heart attack or a stroke. And this researcher was one of the first to publish in a major journal research that showed that C-reactive protein, which is an indicator of inflammation, is a better predictor of risk of heart attacks than cholesterol levels. Well, this paper was particularly interested in because it discusses how coronary calcium, that is calcium that's deposited in coronary arteries, is an even better predictor of heart risks. Now, I don't want to unpack the whole study because it was done in a very kind of restricted context. But let me just say to frame this as to why I have a problem with it is that on the one hand, while it points away from the standard cholesterol theory of heart attacks, heart disease, it stays firmly within the conventional treatments for those risks.
So in other words, they kind of debunk the usual theories of why people get heart attacks and perhaps strokes, and then they sort of quietly go back into their comfortable place, their happy place.
Oh yeah, they go to the happy place. Okay. Because this is a little wonky part, but it illustrates what's going on here. This is a study that took place within a much broader study, and the name of this study, the acronym for it, is JUPITER. It has nothing to do with planetary alignment
or whether women are different from men.
It has nothing to do with that. It is a tortured acronym for Justification for the Use of Statins in Primary Prevention.
So do they justify the use of statins after saying that coronary calcium is really the problem and coronary calcium is not treated by
statins? Well, actually, it's the whole study as a, the study as a whole, this big body of that it, this is thing is a part of, presumably is a justification for it. But this paper in particular is not a justification. They assume that that's what you're going to do. You're going to use
statins.
Yeah,
but that makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense.
Because, yes.
Because essentially, if I understand the paper in a sort of bottom line, which is, when I encounter a paper like this, I read the introduction, I look at what they're examining, and then I jump to the conclusions in the discussion, and I scan through that. And what I understood from this is that, coronary calcium, I believe you will see this happen, deposits of calcium in situations where there are nutrient deficiencies, and also I guess it's important, and you can explain this, that this is not the same as the calcium you measure in your blood.
That is correct.
Although I would think that in the same way that the calcium you eat or take in supplements might deposit itself in unfortunate areas like your aortic valve, which we know it will do as you age under stress and your bones are going and then it's looking for calcium, it scavenges around and goes, oh, look, let's break down the bones. It does all this stuff. And then, calcium goes to all the wrong places. That's a nutrient deficiency. That's a lack of sufficient vitamin K and vitamin D.
That is right.
So I would think that coronary calcium is depositing for much of the same reason. Would you think that that's true, even though this is not the same as measuring serum calcium in your blood?
That is correct.
Okay.
A couple of things in all that. It is true that that serum calcium, there is no relationship between serum calcium and coronary calcium, that the two levels fluctuate differently. But there is a relationship between vitamin D levels, mm-hmm. and vitamin K levels, mm-hmm. and coronary calcium. So, yes.
So there's a deposition issue, yeah.
So there's a deposition issue. The question is, what is calcium? I mean, it's that question that you and I always ask. Well, what's, in terms of what your body's doing, what's the rationale for calcium going up? What's the calcium doing there in the first place?
Well, actually, what we usually ask is, what is that?
Don't touch it.
What is it?
Don't touch that.
Anyway, the point is that, so is it the case that you can trot into your doctor now and say, and slam your hand on the exam table and say, measure my coronary calcium?
Oh, no. No, you don't want to do this because here's the way you measure coronary calcium. You get what is technically called... a computerized tomography.
Oh, no.
Also known as a CT scan.
Oh, no.
That's how they measure this
stuff. Oh, you can never get enough radiation.
Oh, you can never get it, especially on your heart.
Oh, God. Well, in case people don't remember this from other shows that we've done, radiation, ionizing radiation, and now, actually, this is a side issue, but ionizing radiation does damage your heart muscle. So targeting the heart with ionizing radiation might not be prudent.
Yeah, that's John Goffman.
John Goffman did 2 5-year studies about medical procedures and the incidence of breast cancer and other cancers, and then later went back and looked at heart disease and found there was a direct relationship between the amount of scanning and radiation in medical treatments that people received and the amount of heart disease that he found. So it's damaging to the heart. And incidentally, I didn't read it completely, but there was an interesting article that just got sent to us.
Right,
that
talked, by Cindy Sage, yeah.
Yeah, did she write it? I thought it was sent by her, it was written by somebody. Anyway, the point is that it says that now they can actually see that that non-ionizing radiation, which is all our lovely wireless devices, all of them, all that radar, all that wireless stuff, and ionizing, which is the naughty nuclear radiation that's drifting over from Fukushima, which we're not talking about today for once, and what you get when you get medical procedures, that although the mechanisms differ slightly, that they in fact cause the same kind of damage, which is a big deal because that's new. But anyway, we're digressing.
Well, actually, it's not much of a digression.
Okay.
Because I want to pull it back to calcium.
Yes, let's do that.
Calcium is extremely important for the functioning of the heart, maintaining a heartbeat. And that is because there is a group of cells on the heart called the pacemaker. And the pacemaker cells do exactly what you would think they do. They maintain the pace of the heart, the rhythm. And
if you don't do that, we have a little piece of equipment for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's hook you up.
Which doesn't function around wireless. Anyway, I digress again.
You digress again. But the way that, in fact, I just saw this article yesterday or day before of how calcium channels work in the pacemakers to maintain rhythm.
Rhythm.
And by the way, calcium channels, calcium is the most important atom in terms of our body's electrical signaling. So remember that it's called electromagnetic radiation.
Yes.
You have an atom, calcium atom, which is extremely important in terms of maintaining a number of systems, including the heart, in this case today, the heart, but also insulin secretion, nerve cells. Yes, that's why the sulfonylureas that were
diabetes,
standards
for diabetes.
Diabetes treatment acted on the calcium channels in the beta cells to stimulate insulin production, and why, according to one estimate, there have been something like 780,000 excess deaths due to heart attacks due to over the history of the use of those sulfonylureas.
So before my head is exploding, and before it does completely, I'm thinking about the fact that Wi-Fi affects our calcium channels.
Yes, well, I blanked on his name. Andrew Goldsworthy.
Goldsworthy mm-hmm.
wrote a paper, which I can't find a published version anyplace. It's his thing, but it's one of the hypotheses about how is it that non-ionizing radiation has an effect on nerve cells.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have those neurological effects? And his hypothesis, based on what they've been able to see, is that it creates instability because of the difference in the molecular weight of calcium and potassium ions in maintaining the stability of cell walls. And it is calcium ions that cause the passage of electrical impulse along nerve cells.
Why did I think that it resulted in a deficiency of calcium? I thought it interrupted. Okay, misunderstood.
No, you remember going out on the playground? Well, maybe some of you are too young to remember going out on the playground and taking a magnet and dragging it through the dirt, and you get stuff. Well, you play with magnets. Well, you pass an electromagnetic field, your body through an electromagnetic field. Things that have an electrical charge, which a calcium ion has a charge, are going to be either attracted or repulsed in one direction or another. So you have this field pushing things around.
Funny how we always end up talking about the dangers of wireless. The other thing that's... I knew I was going to forget it. I should have written it down. Wi-Fi and calcium. The other thing to remember about calcium, so that we can go back to the heart and calcium, is that calcium, one of the things that happens with calcium is people go, oh boy, my bones, calcium, I should take lots of calcium. Well, calcium is a vasoconstrictor, and magnesium, which always likes to be partnered with calcium in food and various other things, is a vasodilator. So one goes, and the other opens it up and goes, so if you take too much calcium, you're going to have hypertension. And I see that over and over and over again in clients. I think you've seen it too, where they're taking above the recommended dose of calcium, which is naughty. and should never be done, because calcium minerals are not something you should overdose on. You can overdose on vitamins, as far as I'm concerned, and somebody may call and bring up something that you shouldn't do that with, but for most part, I think you can. Oh, it's getting to that point. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeffrey Fawcett, and we are discussing... What are we calling? Oh, stupid heart treatments. And right now we're unpacking a study about the importance of coronary calcium as a measurement as opposed to measuring other parameters to detect whether or not somebody's going to predict somebody being at risk for heart attacks. Now, downside to this, I mean, the good news is it means that if you can control the deposition of calcium in your coronary, you know, in the aortic valve and in your coronary artery, you probably won't get heart attacks, and that it has nothing to do with cholesterol, nothing. And it's really showing that that's what's causing heart attacks, is the calcium, not the cholesterol. And it may also make the supposition that inflammation is part of this, although inflammation certainly has a role in degrading heart
function. No doubt.
Right.
Well, it's responding to in a way, the progression is...
Anyway, take magnesium along with calcium.
Yeah. Well, more... Well,
don't overdose on calcium.
Yeah, we can come...
Magnesium you can take extra, because if you take too much, it will give you a real bellyache. You'll get flatulent, and your stools will get runny. So you know you've overdosed on that. Calcium, the only way you know is... Somebody looks at what you're taking and goes, oh, my God, what are you doing? And then if you're not taking enough vitamin D and vitamin K, which we'll get back to. But, what were you going to talk about next? Do you know what you're going to talk about next?
Well, I was starting on to a...
sometimes you have to make notes while you're talking.
A path, but I was
go
just...
Go to the path.
I was just going to...
Go down the path.
What I was going to say is that, in my opinion, what the progression has been historically in the conventional research was, oh, my God, it's cholesterol. Let's drive down cholesterol. Why do you have high cholesterol? You have high cholesterol because you have a diet that's high in saturated.
The American diet.
It's the all-American diet, and it's killing us, so we have to do something about that. And then we found out, oops, you know, really, saturated fat hasn't got anything to do with cholesterol, because you actually can't get from increased cholesterol from saturated fat. But never mind that. Cholesterol is really bad, so we have to drive down cholesterol. Well, you know what? Most of the people who get hauled into emergency rooms with heart attacks, when they do autopsies on them, about 50% of them have veins that are just fine. And, as a matter of fact, if you're over 50 years old, male and female, your risk of a heart attack goes up when your cholesterol goes down.
Yes, it does.
And that's been known for quite a while. But
yes,
never mind.
Yes. No, it's a big study. We've talked about it. Go ahead.
High cholesterol is really dangerous, but we have to drive it down. And there's these really great drugs called statins that you can do. And when we do studies with people with high cholesterol, taking statins reduces the rate of heart attacks. But, you know, maybe there's something else going on. Maybe that's... it's inflammation that these plaques that form in arteries and bust off and clog the heart and cause the heart attack, that maybe it would be better to use a measure of that inflammation that is a result of the plaques.
Well, but they did actually, you know, when they did autopsies and stuff, they did find, white cells, and they also found homocysteine,
and cholesterol
and platelets stuff, but small amounts of cholesterol. But so there is a relationship between inflammation and heart disease, but it's not as profound, it seems, as maybe coronary calcium or aortic calcium is going to just close your heart valve down in a hurry.
And that's because that C-reactive protein, the indicator of inflammation, is not quite as good. And so someone started, and this in a way is old news. This is over 10 years ago, some people were doing research into this relationship between coronary calcium and risk of heart attack. And so now we've moved on and even further from cholesterol, but still we're stuck in treating risk of heart attack, heart events, with statins, with a standard set of tools, whereas the things that are indicating are really a long way from what it is that cholesterol is doing in the body.
The other thing that's interesting is that the statins do lower your cholesterol level. In fact, they lower your cholesterol level to very low levels. And the current recommendations now keep getting lower and lower. And what we know from having interviewed both Malcolm Kendrick, MD, who is from the UK, and who has a wonderful article that's online right now called The Great Cholesterol Myth.
I've got a link to it on the site.
You have a link to it on the site, so people can read it. It's a great article. He has a book also called The Great Cholesterol Con, and his name is Kendrick. There are two authors writing books called The Great Cholesterol Con. Anyway, Kendrick, is that when you, and this, it's not just him. I mean, there's also Ufi Ravenskov, UFFE. Ravenskov, who wrote a book called Cholesterol Myths, which is hard to find these days. He's also been interviewed many times. You can go to our downloads and just pop these names into our search engine. You'll find the shows. What they talk about is the dangers of lowering cholesterol. Now, your body sometimes... There are illnesses like cancer which will lower your cholesterol levels. So having low cholesterol has in the past always been a bad predictor of health. And in fact, people's immune system crashes, they found. Ufi has evaluated all the large heart studies for many, many years. That's what he's done. Kendrick refers to his research, and Kendrick also talks about the actual science of what cholesterol is, which is not fat. These are lipoproteins that are, you know, in your brain, phospholipids that you need for function in the brain. They make sex hormones, and your lung surfactant is all these other things. But it's not fat, and it doesn't clog the way he says. He shows that it doesn't. It can't. But lowering cholesterol too low seems to cause the immune system to crash. In fact, people who have a genetic predisposition to have very low cholesterol often have very low immunity as well. And there are other problems like higher risk of strokes among. In fact, in Japan, there was a study that showed that they were trying to predict for, this was that huge fat study. This came out, many years ago, because I covered it probably 10 years ago on the show, when people in Japan started eating more meat, instead of there being more cardiovascular risk, there was less stroke when people started eating meat. Now, of course, eating meat, you know, it's like in all of these studies, they don't control for the type of meat that people are eating. And the word meat can mean, you know, chicken and even fish and other forms of animal protein like eggs that have never been shown to cause cholesterol levels to go up, although even Ufi Ravenskov even tried forcing his cholesterol levels up. So cholesterol goes up in response to some kind of stressor or inflammation in the body. It's going there to try to quell it. It has very little to do with what you eat, although you can lower it some by changing your diet, but there's not a direct one-to-one relationship between how high it is. And when it gets too low, oops, not good. More people die when their cholesterol is low. And then that study you talked about where there was they were trying to predict early death in elderly adults, where they did 5,100 or 5,200 people. And they found you have to factor in blood sugars. If people's blood sugars are normal, the people who lived the longest had the highest cholesterol levels, and it didn't matter what the ratio was. This idea that LDL cholesterol is wicked, you know, it's sort of the... what was the name of that character in Bullwinkle?
Snidely
Whiplash. I have the article sitting here, and he says, Malcolm Kendrick, you know, after going through the different studies, the RF fit trials, all these big studies that were done where they did like 350,000 men at high risk of heart disease were recruited. and they cut their cholesterol consumption by 42%, saturated fat consumption by 28%, total calories by 21%. And this should have made a noticeable dent in heart disease rates, and it did not. And so in the conclusions of this RFIT trial, they said, quote, the overall results do not show a beneficial effect on coronary heart disease or total mortality from this multifactorial intervention. And then Kendrick says, in fact, no clinical trial on reducing saturated fat intake has ever shown a reduction in heart disease. Now, before you go out and eat a fast food thing or a great big pastry, remember that you have to control for blood sugars. If blood sugars are high,
right,
that means your insulin's high and probably your cortisol is high, and those are toxic to the heart. So it means that you're eating fat that is not damaged, that's processed minimally, and you're getting enough either saturated, monounsaturated fats and omega-3 fish oils or whatever kind of omega-3s you want to use to balance out the fats and give you a full complement, so your cells have the right amount of floppiness and rigidity. But you avoid overdosing on damaged vegetable oils that are very delicate. Doesn't mean you can't eat them. It means don't process them badly. Don't buy cheap ones that are extracted with hexane and heat processed. Buy really good brands, organic if possible, and cold treated. And don't heat them when you're cooking with them. Maybe olive oil you could coat something and cook it, but you want to be careful about burning these oils. So damaged fat is going to cause all those factors to go up.
And
except for coronary calcium.
And from my perspective, the issue here is that you are well nourished, as opposed to a deadly bullet that if you eat this particular kind of fat or too much of this or that or the other, that it's going to go directly to high cholesterol or high anything, and you're going to drop dead. I think the perspective here is a healthy diet. And healthy from our perspective, you kind of know what
you can
our
go back
is.
And look at the, again, yeah, the downloads and pick shows on diet and stuff to see. It's very individual. People can eat different things.
But what I wanted to, well, we've got a couple of minutes. I want to make an important point here, which is that the cholesterol theory is a theory of what causes heart attacks. That your cholesterol, and it's, as far as I can tell, not true, but it does help us understand what your body is doing. The same, I believe, is true with coronary calcium. Does coronary calcium cause heart attacks? Depends on one of the things that we did, a couple of years ago with Ufi Ravenscoff and Malcolm Kendrick was based on an article that Kendrick wrote where he challenged the standard view of what causes a heart attack,
yes,
not
did.
What the actual mechanics were. I mean the actual mm-hmm. mechanics. And the theory is your cholesterol gets high. It causes these plaques to build up. A chunk of the plaque blows off. It clogs a coronary artery. The muscle tissue, the heart tissue, is deprived of oxygen, and it dies. It essentially suffers from what happens with gangrene, right? Oxygen supply is do it.
And yeah, but they don't think that's true.
But Kendrick's argued that makes absolutely no sense as to the mechanism. And I remember on the show our asking him, well, what do you think an alternative theory might be? And he said, nobody's asking. And
yeah,
so what was interesting about kind of the confluence of this article about coronary calcium and the article that I saw about the pacemaker and calcium channels working, it kind of said, well, is anybody asking whether the disruption in calcium metabolism, not whether you've got too much, too little in the wrong places, but calcium metabolism generally, and the importance of calcium in the electrical communication that goes on in your body, in this case specifically in the heart, is that telling us something about what could be causing heart attacks?
Well, and the other thing is this whole idea of that clots cause heart attacks and death is dubious at best. And not only does Kendrick say, you know, the clots happen, you know, way before,
right.
way before anyone has a heart attack. And the same thing was said by Howard Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E, who is passed. He was quite elderly, who was a non-invasive cardiologist. Now, he wrote many books, and we have shows by him as well on our downloads, Dr. Howard Wayne. The last show we did with him, I asked him why he used medication instead of vitamins, and he said, because I'm a product of my generation, and you know, as I'm beginning to understand the nutrient interventions, I'm beginning to think that they would have been better. We're running out of time for a break. We need to take a brief musical break. This is Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, and we are talking about stupid heart treatments. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll go back to this topic and discuss it some more. So please stay with us. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and we're discussing stupid heart treatments. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for easier extended Take two. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows. Choose a download or a new library card feature. You can find information about our practice. You can find a free stream of this week's show, our book, and there's a whole lot more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can contact us directly by emailing us at admin, @yourownhealthandfitness.org. And most of what you're hearing today, we're referring to different people we've interviewed and what they talk about. You can find all of this in our downloads, and you can use the search engine or go to radio show and then find topics and choose the area that you're interested in and peruse. There will be in-depth, and also there are postings of, you know, if there's a book or references, various things will be there. So to sum it up, what we've said so far is that there's a very interesting piece of research that just came out that shows that being able to measure, not that you would want to do this because it's done with, it's a radiation test, it's a CT scan, which is rather bad for your heart, actually. But nevertheless, what they've discovered is that if someone has a deposition of calcium in the coronary artery, it's a much better predictor of whether or not they're going to have a heart event or heart damage or heart event than any of the previous things. And so what we're talking about is how it is that at the end of this article they're still going back to statins, which don't treat coronary calcium levels. Did they talk about what the mechanisms were for the calcium being?
Absolutely not.
Okay. They just noticed that you know, these guys had lots of it, and they're clutching their chests and falling over, and the other people are not.
Well, this not stranger thing, but in terms of the narrowness of the study, like I said, the study is based on a larger study, a group of people, all of whom are taking a statin drug. So it's already, they're trying to figure out a way to justify using statins. But what they further narrowed their study on was gee whiz, you know, there are these people with low LDL cholesterol, and yet they have low C-reactive protein, and yet they're still having heart attacks. Why is that? Could we find something that's a better predictor? And so they used calcium deposition in coronary artery to do that.
Yeah, and then what they actually did was talk themselves out of using statins, although not so much at the end of the article.
No, not at all.
You still use the statin.
It's assumed.
It's assumed, even though they can't actually explain.
Well, remember that the what led to use of using C-reactive protein as a measure was almost empirical. They said, gee, we've noticed that these people who had low C-reactive protein were less likely to have heart attacks than people with high C-reactive protein, even if they had comparable levels of cholesterol. What could explain that? But it was in the context of using statins. So they found that the statins had an effect and then made the association, as opposed to the other way around, of saying, well, gee, maybe heart attacks are an inflammatory response, and et cetera.
Oops.
So it's they're kind of at a stage where it might be some out there somewhere.
So why are we so desperately against statins? Are we being paid by the vitamin industry to do this show? No.
Let's all say it together.
No. So if you want to hear some if you want to hear something about that, we have Dr. Wayne Graveline, Graveline. Talking about the dangers of statins. He was he's a former astronaut and a physician himself who was given statins and suffered from something called transient global amnesia, which means his brain completely went off.
He forgot who he was.
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, it's
which for some people might be a good thing.
It wasn't pleasant for him, and it isn't pleasant for people it happens to. But there are other problems with statins aside from the fact that I just told you that. And, of course, you should still remember you're listening to me, but I'm filtering this material through my brain and Jeffrey's brain and stuff. But the lowering of cholesterol does not look like a good event. When you look at studies with people with low cholesterol, their immune systems don't work and they're more at risk for strokes. And people who are very ill, like people with an advanced cancer, have low cholesterol levels. So why are we driving them down so low? I mean, you can't make sex hormones. You can't use your brain. You can't breathe properly. It's just nuts. But the other thing that statins do, ironically, is they kick out, and this is true of almost all heart drugs, all the drugs like thinners and various things, they kick out all of the protective nutrients, which I'll cover at the end, I promise, again. So the CoQ10, the carnitine, the vitamin K are all kicked out. And those are the things that actually preserve the heart function. And then you have a problem with with the statins, a side effect, which is really an effect of the drug, of it making muscles weaker. And last time I noticed, the heart is a muscle. So, that concerns me a bit, that we're weakening muscles all over the body. And what was the other thing? Cancers? There were various things about statins. There were all kinds of things. The other thing that I found in notes about Howard Rain was that heparin, one of the blood thinners, is a sulfated glycoprotein that the body makes in mast cells with histamine. So it's attracted to inflammation sites and increases circulation. So it's going to make the inflammation worse. So while you're thinning your blood, you're actually making it more inflammatory and possibly creating the plaques, which are actually white cells. That's my interpretation.
Yep.
So statins are pretty nasty. They cause a lot of... Oh, they also tank your brain. No, well, we said that, transient.
Yeah.
I guess I'm having some of that without the statins.
Yeah, but you remember who you are.
I do, yes. Right. Yes, I do. So the brain is where... Yeah, I remember talking to both my mother and her sister separately after they started, taking statins. And it was one of those conversations of, so where are we going? Oh, we're going to this place and we're doing that. And, oh, that's lovely and that's nice. So how is everything? Everything's good. And where are we going? We're going to that place. Oh, lovely. It's lovely. It's good. And how are you? To that place. We're going to that place and I'm fine. And where are we going? So, yeah.
By the way, there's a, I'm not sure you know this, but there's a whole program at UC San Diego, part of their med school, that is studying the side effects of statins.
No, that's
and
good.
They're always uncovering really. It's actually the place where they really beat the drum on, you know, it's really a bad idea to give statins to women who are under 45.
I think it's a bad idea to give them to
anybody. Well, it's a bad idea to do any of that, but they really highlight it. So it's now part of the standard thing.
Well, they're using them for everything now, statins. They're giving them to people for depression. Because everything's inflammatory. It's all inflammatory. Let's give it to you for everything.
They're talking about inflammatory. Giving it to diabetics separately as a diabetes
treatment. That's a good
idea,
because diabetes is inflammatory. Yeah. So everything's inflammatory. Breathing.
Yeah.
God forbid you should take an
antioxidant.
Hopefully
we're inflammatory.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. We should probably get some statins. So what are we suggesting for the heart? Well, it may be interesting to discover that along with nutrients that are protective, and then, of course, let me just get this out of the way. Do I have to talk about exercise? Don't make me come to when you were bad as children, you're in the back seat and your father stops the car and turns around and says, don't make me come back there. Exercise exercises your heart. Now, your heart is beating all the time if you're lucky, and fairly evenly if your nutrient status and your vitamin, your mineral, as we were talking about, your minerals are balanced, hopefully, and this, you're not sitting in a high wireless environment, which will make your heart beat unevenly and hot and fast and weird and stuff. But it still needs to be exercised like your lungs do. And so cardiovascular exercise, heart and lung exercise, it trains your heart. And it doesn't have to be painful and sweaty. It can be walking, and do it as much as you can without making yourself more tired and unpleasant. There is a training effect, but the exercise is the primary thing. I mean, it's just huge. It's really huge.
I want to plug for exercise as well, but for a somewhat different but related reason here. It seems to me that this calcium research is pointing to something that's extremely important. One of the studies I looked at said that
statins. Get some statins.
Yeah, get some statins.
You just said.
Even though serum calcium and parathyroid function. Parathyroid is what is implicated in bone mineralization, demineralization.
Yeah, and if it's high, then your calcium gets
crazy. Those two weren't associated in some studies with coronary calcium. Demineralization of bone was associated with coronary calcium in other studies. And what that leads me to believe is that exercise is critical for maintaining bone mass, in addition to having the correct nutrient balance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's critical to exercise, because when you are maintaining or building muscle, guess what? You're also stimulating all those things that maintain your bone mass, and your bone mass is what is going to be heavily implicated in your calcium metabolism, and your calcium metabolism is what this research is pointing to as critical to your heart health.
Right. Yeah. So along with taking the nutrients that make the calcium go into your bones instead of into your heart valve or your coronary artery, the important point here is that about six things came into. I wish I could just plug a microphone into my brain. It would be pretty funny. It would sound like some kind of new age radio show with static.
It would sound like.
Oh, wait. Let me try to do this. There are several reasons. The heart valve, the deposition of calcium in the heart valve, and presumably coronary calcium artery in the coronary artery thing, is for similar reasons. It can happen as a result of stress, which does accelerate your aging. If you're under horrible stress, your body starts to catabolize or steal or break down your tissues to get the minerals that it needs. Also, when people are under terrible stress and they're taking a blood thinner for some reason, that makes it worse because it destroys your vitamin K, which helps with the deposition of calcium into the bone and mediates clotting. It doesn't cause clotting. It mediates it, but blood thinners are K agonists, so they get rid of it and there go your bones. So high stress of all the various sorts, including illness and psychosocial stress and wireless and all the things that you do, not resting, overdoing this and that and the other thing, and then mineral imbalances. So the body scavenges the calcium. The problem is, this also happens when you age. As you age, your body may say, uh-oh, we need some calcium, and the calcium, you know, is pulled out of your bones, and the bones start getting thin. And then it goes to deposit it, and without proper amounts of vitamin D and vitamin K and good hormone balance, which is where we're going next, it won't go to your bones. It will go to your heart valve, your coronary artery, and the bad things will happen. So that's how it works. That's how the calcium goes to the wrong places. This is Lena Berman. I'm with Jeff Fawcett. We're talking about stupid heart treatments, and we've been talking about calcium deposition. So, again, calcium needs to be taken in conjunction with other microminerals, not in doses higher than you need, and you will need vitamin K and vitamin D, and I'll tell you what I think is a good amount to start with. But the other important thing in terms of the deposition of calcium and bone mass and heart strength is all that wonderful research that was done by Jan Muller. And after he died, they just got rid of everything he wrote. It just all disappeared. You can maybe find a couple. No, it was
really shocking.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
and what really I understand, shocking. Well, when I interviewed Malcolm Carruthers, which is another show you can look for, C-A-R-R-U-T-H-E-R, Carruthers, a Brit. And he wrote a book about the heart and testosterone and all this. He actually studied with Jan Muller. He's quite elderly. And what he said is that nobody could dispute him because he was so brilliant. Everything he was saying was so good. His research was so good that he just, you know, nobody could really counter him. And so what happened instead is when the new theories came out, all of his writings, everything's disappeared. You can sometimes find a copy of his book, Cholesterol, which is about what we're about to... You want to take this on, talk about his
research?
Well,
I want to say that, reaffirm this, that if you go to something like Google Scholar and you look up Mueller's work...
It's M-O with an umlaut over it, L-L-E.
It's
not an umlaut. What is it? It's a slash.
It's a slash through it. If you do M-O-L-L-E-R, it'll probably
check. And it's G-E-N.
J-E-N.
I said G.
Jens Mueller.
J-E-N. It's because my mother took statins.
No doubt. Just to verify this for myself, if I look him up and look to see who references his works, it just disappears. There's like this blank out there. No one wants to talk about him. But when I read this little book on cholesterol, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, we managed to find a used copy, but I had David Zava from ZRT Labs, who believes all this stuff and tests all this stuff and whatnot. Z as in zebra, RT Labs, saliva testing and blood spot. He sent me, you know, he copied the book, so I have a pirate copy, but it's hard to find. Anyway, you read the book.
So the eye-opening thing about it was that Mueller looked at the actual metabolism of cholesterol. Where does cholesterol come from? And I actually don't know whether he was motivated because there was all the hoopla about the cholesterol theory of...
Well, he was treating patients with testosterone.
But, yeah, right. But what he does is he says, well, let's look at what cholesterol actually does in your body. Oh, look, it's the resource for sex hormones, testosterone in particular. So he started treating patients, men and women, using testosterone and had remarkable success in both recovery and in preventing heart attacks, heart disease. The interesting thing about cholesterol is the building blocks for cholesterol aren't fats. They are a substance called acetyl coenzyme A. Acetyl coenzyme A is basically what your body makes ATP out of. ATP
energy
is what you make energy. So we have this link between energy metabolism and the source for cholesterol, which is the basis for sex hormones, which are extremely important. And if we think about this a bit, why would your body increase the production of cholesterol? Well, one of the things that your body needs is sex hormones, and if you are low, your liver is going to say, gee, we need more raw material.
Yeah.
Is this really that hard to figure
out? Well, and we see it. Both of us see it in our clients.
Yeah.
that it, cholesterol goes up after andropause and menopause.
Well, I did some further research, and this story actually gets even better. Because in terms of what we're discussing today, the role of calcium, turns out that testosterone is an antagonist to calcium.
Oh.
So that it is a vasodilator.
Yes, it is.
So that low testosterone means that you're not having calcium contested in the coronary arteries, increasing risk of heart events.
Mm-hmm.
And to tie back to the energy metabolism, guess what? Insulin deranges coronary calcium as well, insulin being that hormone which regulates the flow of glucose through your system, and meaning that insulin goes up
because you're comforting yourself with starches,
because your body is trying to handle all of the glucose
sugar
that's flowing through your system, and that stimulates deposition of coronary calcium.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah, I mean, I've known hormone balance is absolutely critical.
Yes.
To protect the heart. And testosterone is well known for, and now we understand also that because it's a bone builder in both genders, men can lose bone too, but in women, you know, particularly, it's the thing that maintains your bone mass much more than everything else, although estradiol can too, the strongest estrogen. But obviously, if it's protecting your bone mass, that means it's also regulating the deposition of calcium. Whoopee. So the other thing is, as Jeffrey said, it opens its vasodilator. It makes the blood flow better. Whereas in men and women, estrogen, which works in the brain and does all that good stuff, is slightly clotty, but it's very slightly clotty. But when women, for instance, have a hysterectomy, their testosterone drops like a rock. And the everything else disappears too. So they have a much more of a heart risk at that point because of the low testosterone, but and mood and all the rest of it. But the misunderstanding about estradiol, about estrogen having a bad rap, is that it's supposed to be clotty. But when they tested the amount of clots that it caused, it was only a tenth of a percent higher than the normal rate of non-fatal strokes. So it only raised it by a tenth of a percent more. And if you add bioidentical progesterone, it doesn't happen. And if you also add testosterone, it doesn't happen. It balances. These hormones are supposed to be together. They're supposed to live together. So women are protected before menopause from heart effects, and it's only afterwards that there's potentially some problem. It's also... estrogen is also an antioxidant and reduces exercise-induced myocardial ischemia. It inhibits fibrinogen, which is something that clogs arteries as well. It causes atherosclerosis. It also inhibits, estrogen inhibits the thickening of arteries. It's a vasodilator, so even though it may cause a little bit more clottiness, it actually opens up the veins and the arteries and prevents cardiovasospasms, which is by restoring normal artery reactivity. So this means that it protects from heart spasms that can cause fatal heart attacks, and these effects are enhanced when the ratio, and really important, the ratio of estradiol and progesterone is maintained. This was all studied by in 1988 by Ken Hermsmeyer and his colleagues. They published a study using rhesus monkeys to discover how women's hormones protect their hearts, and they found that while estradiol was protective, and these are not biosimilar, match the molecular structure of what we make. That only when bioidentical progesterone, in other words, when they used the estradiol alone, it enhanced, it stopped the vasospasm, it stopped the heart attacks. Don't ask how they did this; it's not nice. But if they used a synthetic medroxyprogesterone acetate, it increased the risk. It destroyed the beneficial effects of the estradiol and inhibited the protective effects of estradiol during a coronary spasm. Only bioidentical progesterone was enhancing of the effect. And then testosterone, of course. Now, Oh, we're going to run out of time. So let's talk. Let me just briefly. So you've got the idea that you need to balance your minerals. That if you've got hypertension, you need probably more magnesium. You may be taking too much calcium, and you don't need to take a lot of calcium if you're taking a good strong dose of vitamin D or vitamin K. If you can get out in the sun between 12 and 2 for 20 minutes or so during the sunny time of the year, you might not have to take extra vitamin D. But vitamin D3 can be taken. You might want to measure your vitamin D levels first. But generally speaking, people can handle 5,000 international units a day of vitamin D, and some need 10, depending. Vitamin K also, there are some vitamin companies that are making a very high dose of vitamin K with a complement of the two types, the 1 and the 2. So a higher dose, not just 100 micrograms, but more like 10 milligrams. So look for those. Life Extension and various ones have, like, Super Ks. Under high stress, particularly, you've got to watch this stuff. The most heart protective of vitamins are coenzyme Q10, 100 to 150, 2 to 3 times daily. L-carnitine, 1,000 milligrams, 2 times. These are with food. Omega-3s are very heart protective, and they decrease inflammation. They should be taken with vitamin E, 400 to 800 IUs a day. Some people are using D-ribose to protect the heart, and it's very heart protective and can restore the heart in cases where people's hearts are very damaged already. 5 to 10 grams daily. People are very different about how they feel when they take these things, so we start slowly and see how you feel. Obviously, increasing methylation lowers homocysteine, and homocysteine, again, is when your body's trying to make glutathione in your liver to detoxify, and either because you've eaten a pound of steak in one meal and your body just can't synthesize all of it, what kind of a dummy does that, or that you inherited a genetic variant that gets you stuck at homocysteine, what you do is you take trimethylglycine and B vitamins, all of them, the folate, B12, B6, you've heard me do this, it's like a chant. Taurine is also very protective of the heart, 1,000 milligrams twice a day. Now, if you do have high fibrinogen, you can specifically drop that. If you're measuring, you can measure these things. You can have tests done to measure your prothrombin time, your fibrinogen levels. These are much better parameters for heart. But if your fibrinogens are high, natokinase, NATTOKANISE, maybe, is very good for fibrinogen. Obviously, do not smoke. There is nothing worse for the heart, for anybody. Do not smoke. Do not use wireless. Exercise. Recover. Watch your blood sugars, because both high stress hormones and high insulin levels are cardiotoxic. And do not get an angiogram, angioplasty, stent, or bypass surgery. And if you want to know why, go back and listen to some of the shows with Howard Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E, and gosh.
Also, don't get a CT scan.
Yeah, please don't get a CT scan, and also other types of procedures, where, especially when it's targeted at your chest.
And don't let them put in a stent.
Oh, and thyroid disease also, low T3, the active form of thyroid can predict heart problems. So sometimes people, that looks like I have to wrap it up, doesn't it?
And it's also associated with coronary calcium.
Oh, low.
Hypothyroid.
Oh, wow. Yep. Okay, well, there you have it. You have our counter argument to stupid heart treatments. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows. Choose a download or our new library card feature. Also find information about our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our book, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.